What is up, you beautiful people? Welcome back to the Built on Bitcoin podcast, where we cover everything going on in the Stacks ecosystem. I'm your host, Jake Blockchain, and today we have Jonathan Sadlow on the podcast. Jonathan is a venture capitalist, which is a fancy word for an investor. He's a general partner and founded Gossamer Capital, and Gossamer has been one of the biggest supporters and early investors in Stacks since Mainnet. They invested in a bunch of companies in Cohort 1, coming out of Stacks Ventures. Safe to say they're probably going to invest heavily in Cohort 2. And so we talk about what it's like as a VC, you know, what does a VC actually do? But we also talk about his history, like what did he do back in the day, which I'll drop a little hint. It had to do with social media for one part, but he also had a pretty interesting business doing urban farming, specifically mushrooms and fungi. And he has some pretty interesting takes on how these kind of like open-looped ecosystems build and overlay with things like Web3 and human systems, which I thought was fascinating. So anyways, let me not talk too much. Let me jump right into this interview, which I thought was fascinating, with Jonathan Sadlow, general partner at Gossamer Capital.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin.
Jonathan, how are you doing today, my friend?
I'm great. It's great to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. This is exciting for me. I love talking to all the different types of Stacks builders. And you're my first general partner investor type. So, and I'm new to this space. For people who listen to the podcast, I now work at Stacks Ventures as an analyst. No experience in that field, you know. Trevor just trusts my work ethic and I show up and just do my best. And I know the Stacks space well, but there's a lot to cover and to explore with you about what that means. So excited, but I'd love to start with your background. And it's always fun to kind of deep dive into people's LinkedIns a little bit, because you can see like a breadcrumb of what they were doing. And I see two tracks when I look at your resume. One, you're kind of an entrepreneur. You're building some kind of mushroom type business, something in the biofield, it looks like. And then you were also kind of like ascending the kind of like corporate ladder in different fields, stepping from role to role to role to role. Sure. That's a decent bracket to build off of. Tell me where I'm wrong, but I'd love to hear about your background.
You're absolutely right. It's been a dual kind of parallel path. So my career started in Madison Avenue when I got out of college, and I got to be a young ad exec right at the time that social media Web 2.0 was really starting to take place. And this is around 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, around those times. And that was a great time to be in advertising. It was massively disruptive. You see media spend from television and print just tanking, media spend in digital, search, Facebook, all of that ascending. And so got to really be on the front lines of that change and help drive and create kind of, be part of the Web 2 kind of marketing movement. During that time, you know, like you pointed out, I've kind of always been entrepreneurial. I tried to launch my first startup that time, which was kind of a crowdsourcing design company called Fat Muffin, which failed rather quickly, which was, it's okay. I was young and didn't know what I was doing. But at that time, you know, as I was a marketing strategist and working in Madison Avenue, I started studying ecosystems as a way to help me understand media systems, the economy, marketing systems. To me, these are living systems. And so as I started studying more in biology and getting deeper and deeper into it, I became absolutely enthralled and decided I needed to go back to school and study molecular biology in grad school. at City University of New York. And that's what I did. And that's kind of where my career started to branch. At that time, I had a good network in New York City amongst brand managers and ad agencies. And so to kind of afford my school at the time, I would consult and then study molecular and chemistry and everything. Also started getting into cancer research during this time, and agricultural biosciences as well were some passion points that kind of emerged. And while I was doing cancer research with yeast, which is a single cell fungus, I had to learn everything I could about fungi to do this cancer research. I learned that humans share 30% of a genome with fungi. They're closer to us than they are to green plants. Our best medicines come from fungi. Ecologically, they're incredibly important. There would be no forests, whether or not be for fungi and the interactions they have with the root systems of trees and grasses and such. And so all of these things, I wanted to create a biotech and based on fungi, which I look as a platform technology. And so I started Burrow Mushrooms, the first urban mushroom farm in New York City. And over time, I scaled that business up into the Hudson Valley region. Essentially, I kind of came to the conclusion with urban agriculture, as you start to scale that, you kind of reach a point where it's just the congestion of the city and the prices of land in the city and all of these things don't make a lot of sense to really scale up agriculture in downtown areas, in my experience. So built that business up, sold the majority stake of it in 2020, around the same time that I had my first daughter. And then, kind of while that business was being built and I was working in agriculture and doing this, I also got recruited to work over at Google at that time. So I worked at Google around 2014 to 16 on Google Cloud Platform and Google Apps for Work. And so I'd been doing consulting while I was still building my agriculture business and doing other things like that. So I've been in New York City tech world very deeply, kind of entrenched from an advisory and consulting standpoint. So I've always worked with startups. Always been very entrepreneurial and bringing that marketing support. And so really worked on the tech side and the product and growth marketing side over there at Google. Then got recruited over to Spacious and got to be the first hire and chief marketing officer over there. We're a venture-backed startup based in New York. And we took restaurants that were closed for breakfast and lunch and turned that into co-working space Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. And so these were nice, fancy restaurants, that were, only dinner service. And so it built a lot of community through those networks, went from 0 to 1 with that business. And then it got acquired by WeWork in 2019. At that time, that was kind of towards the end of 2019. That was just before WeWork's failed IPO, which was a really fascinating moment. And then as that was started to happen, I really started to seriously get into crypto and Web3 from an advisory and kind of investment standpoint. And then slowly kind of during, COVID and some of the booms in crypto from, that I'd, been paying attention to from, for the last decade, really started to catch my attention and decided to kind of go all in and started Gossamer Capital. My partner, Chris, we raised our first fund and have been going that in that direction ever since.
After the races. Okay. You opened up a whole can of worms. I'm going to see where I want to take this. So it's interesting. You mentioned you did social media early on. It was kind of like the golden age kind of thing. And you said ecosystems. And I thought you were going to talk about ecosystems of like people and like how people come together, but you moved it to the bio space. I'm curious if like coming from those two worlds, do you see any corollaries of how people connect and anything you learned in kind of your more ecological bio, like learning education?
Absolutely. So my partner, Chris, is also in agriculture. So we have a biological lens. The way that we look at the world, we believe Web3 and decentralization will win because nature is decentralized. It's not a closed system in the way that a lot of Web2 companies are. In nature, you don't see certain trees just grow to be 10,000 feet in a forest and all the others stay same. So we look at nature for a lot of inspiration, patterns that we see, systems that we see, just like we're having it, you know, in the economy with a bear market. It's as much emotional as it is technical. And that's because, you know, we're human actors. And so I think if you use a living systems lens, and I think we've been kind of in this shift, this paradigm shift from closed systems thinking, which was really a physics driven philosophy that really emerged around, you know, the kind of Einstein, the Planck times, the late 1800s and early 1900s, where physics really influenced economics and everything, concepts like economic engines, right? Engines are closed systems. And really, more accurately, things are living systems. The inputs flow in and out organically. And so we look at things with a biological lens and really use biology ecosystems to understand and hypothesize about you know, opportunities and investments.
That's so interesting. So it seems like one of the benefits to a closed loop style system is like you're really focused on the observables and then you kind of build up primitives off of that. The kind of more fluid and in this sense, decentralized idea is more, I'm not sure how to word it. Like it is more fluid. So it's hard to grasp, but you are closer to what you would assume reality feels like, which is like, what would you say when you say nature is decentralized? Like we all see nature, but it's hard to pin down what exactly, you know, you do one thing over there and it's going to have a butterfly effect of 10 things down that way. Is that kind of how you think about it?
Precisely. And so, you know, closed systems, these are systems that we can control all the inputs and outputs, manipulate the system and isolate the system. But in nature, systems aren't like that. The inputs and outputs flow organically. Sunlight comes in, gets converted, you know, by chlorophyll into chemical energy and moves through the system, right? Like the bunny comes and eats the grass, the wolf comes and eats the bunny, that energy is transferred throughout the system. And then ultimately, you know, material is recycled, reused. And I think if you really study ecosystems and, you know, there's a whole area of community biology that I think there's a lot of learnings for Web3 to pluck because, you know, Web3 is all about building community and building and creating ownership through this new technology and new set of tools that we have, NFTs, DAOs, dApps, et cetera. And so I'm not trying to say that it's simple to get your head around. I think it's really complicated. Living systems are way more complicated than closed systems. But if you can use that lens, I think it helps you, you know, get to truth. In a different way, perhaps, I hope.
Makes sense to me. I love that. Okay. And then you mentioned towards the end of the initial spiel that you were doing some crypto advising, but you didn't mention Bitcoin before that. Where was crypto on your radar as you were kind of like, it was on its ascension? Where did you kind of peek your head in and when start watching it?
Yeah. So in New York, there's a bar in NoHo called Tom and Jerry's, and at least, you know, around 2010, 11, 12, so that's where a lot of us who worked in tech in New York would go and have a beer after work and talk shop. And I remember the early Coinbase team being in there and talking about Bitcoin, and that's kind of where I started to hear about it first. And you know, I started kind of getting into it a little bit, just wanted to like buy some to understand the process and things like that. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't my sole focus at the time. So it was something that I kind of, you know, let kind of fall to the wayside with me a little bit. But as Ethereum emerged, smart contracts and other deeper integrations with technology started to emerge, different applications of Web3 started to emerge. I started paying attention again, saw the ICOs, stuff that were happening. I wasn't super active, but, you know, was aware during that time of working in tech. I've always been kind of, you know, have every bit of kind of tech on the periphery that I kind of work in or consult in or am aware of, but very, very engaged in the tech, software, hardware kind of world from both New York and Silicon Valley, just because I've worked in it for so many years. So that was kind of my early experience with crypto.
Okay. And then you start doing VC stuff in early 2021. That's when you guys formed Gossamer.
Yeah. In 2020, started to get kind of more active in it, started building a thesis around it. And then, and yes, in 2021, we formed Gossamer, created our first fund, and started, you know, making our first investments. And, you know, as you can tell, and you know, what this podcast is mostly about is stacks. And so I got connected with Trevor early on, I guess shortly after Stacks was going into mainnet, and asked to be a mentor with the Stacks Accelerator. And that's something that I had already been doing. I'd already been advising a lot of startups, kind of in Web 2 and other areas. And as Chris, my partner, and I were kind of building our thesis, our investment thesis, you know, we came to believe that a lot of the value was going to accrue around Bitcoin, for, you know, a lot of the security reasons. We were already seeing Bitcoin kind of being perceived as, you know, digital real estate, digital gold, these kind of narratives that followed. But we also saw early that it could also be a network. And so as we read the papers on Stacks and got deeper into the ecosystem, I think for us, a lot of it clicked. And then there was a great opportunity for us to jump in and be one of the most active investors in the Stacks ecosystem.
Very cool. Yeah. It's always great to see Gossamer supporting all the amazing companies we see coming out, like Alex and whatnot.
Lots of them.
So much. And we don't need to bang the drum of how everything's going to accrue to Bitcoin. The thesis we all believe 100%, but I'm curious. I think a lot of people, myself included, like the peek behind the curtain I've been getting about what investors really do has been eye-opening. I think a lot of people think that you just take in money and then you just pluck out good teams and you give them a check and then you just wait. And it's like pretty easy hands-off job. What in your perspective, I'd love to hear, like, what does a VC do? Like, what's the average week look like for a VC?
So I think there's a bit of a distinction between traditional VC and Web3 VC. And what I mean is, so Gossamer, we kind of behave a bit more like a hedge fund in that we have a DeFi portfolio, a multi-million dollar DeFi portfolio that we manage and operate, invest in along with the companies that we invest in, the DeFi protocols that we invest in. We are also evaluating creating another fund that's could be a crypto long short trading fund. You know, there's also a lot of Web3 VCs that will be validators on chains and do provide a lot of computer science services as well. We don't have a lot of those tools at Gossamer at the moment. But it's certainly some areas that we're looking at into. So I think Web3 VCs are much more engaged in the ecosystem. We're trying to figure it out as well. And you can't just figure it out by looking from the outside in. You've really got to be, you know, you've got to be following transactions on the blockchain. You've got to be super engaged in Discord and the communities. And so I think it's a bit more entrepreneurial than traditional venture capital firms, which do pull in lots of capital from institutional investors, et cetera, and just allocate that, you know, focus purely on power rule of investing. It's a numbers game, competing to getting the best deals and whatnot. Venture capital certainly is, you know, a numbers game in that way. But, you know, we can make, because of things like DeFi and trading, revenue in other ways than just returns on startup investments, equity investments, and as well as tokenization. So there's a lot of different ways. So, but a typical week, meeting with lots of teams, lots of founders, lots of new founders. And, we've got a process for, how we kind of work through that from start to finish with teams. And so we're meeting with teams. Gossamer, one of the areas of added value that we really focus on is a lot of the marketing and growth side of things that I kind of mentioned to you before that I have a lot of background in. So we have a strategic partnership with the global ad agency Wieden Kennedy, where we help connect our portfolio companies to the great resources that a company like that can only bring, as well as helping to connect them to large brands and from business development standpoint. So I spend a lot of my time trying to connect big brands in to our portfolio companies to give them an edge, give them business development opportunities. Spend a lot of time doing paperwork, reading over investment documents, coordinating with our legal team on all of that, whether we, have to build out side letters or other kind of, instruments or review. Fortunately, some of the investment documents are templatized, but a lot of people like to put a little special twist on them, which then obviously creates more paperwork for us to kind of sift through. So, and then, there's, a lot of people don't think about it, but venture capital firms are always raising money as well for our next funds. And so that's something that we spend a lot of time on. We're raising our fund now, which will be a $20 million fund focused on equity and token investments. So, every week is, as being as a small team, we're cranking. I wish I had more time, just as all of us, to get more out. I'd love to be putting more content out. I think that would be a great way to kind of get our perspective out and our thesis out and show the great returns that we're getting. But there's only so many hours in the day, right?
Don't we know it? it's the everlasting grind. It's interesting. You said, you have to be super involved in some of these protocols and some of these tools to really understand them. And that makes sense. Like, everyone jokes about how fast crypto moves. Like, crypto moves at warp speed, and like a year in crypto is like 20 in regular life. And that what that means is that the ground is constantly shifting. And so to get a pulse of where you're currently standing, where the kind of like puck is going, you have to be closer to those things. And I've heard this quote, I think it's from Mark Andreessen, of strong opinions loosely held. And when I first heard that, I'm like, oh, I like that. That sounds cool. Like, you fight vigorously for your idea, but if you're wrong, you scrap it for the better idea. And as I've been interacting more in this investment space, I realize how important, from my perspective, why it's important is because you have to filter so fast through so many different companies, and you have to kind of fall back on your thesis so quickly, make a decision, and then move on. And so you have to have conviction in your belief, but if the landscape changes, you can't keep doubling back on, Web2 social media. That would be a horrible idea. So I'm curious about, what does that, is that calculation right? Is that how you see it? But does it, now that you've said that about Web2 and Web3, does that term mean more or change as a Web2 investor versus a Web3 investor?
Well, I don't think Web2 is going away. And I think the winners, especially from startups all the way to Fortune 500s, the winners are going to be the ones that can incorporate, can kind of integrate Web2 and Web3. And that's something I'm really focused on right now from a marketing standpoint. And I consult with Fortune 500s about how to do this as well. So that's another thing that we do during the week. That quote, I think, is, for anybody who really is seeking truth, there's nothing, I think people who are seeking truth love more than to be proved wrong, because then, hey, we found the right solution. To me, that's like, it's very much in line with the scientific method, which is something that I kind of take, and just being a biologist and chemist, and something that I use in my approaches. And I think it also signals kind of, you know, the adaptability. I think it was Hawkins that said, you know, that's like the highest signal of intelligence. It's how quickly someone, you know, adapts to changing environment and changing ideas and information. You know, you instinctively want to kind of double down oftentimes you know, especially in, you know, in bear markets, these are times where people can get really hurt. You know, you can double down and think, hey, I'm just going to kind of, you know, dollar cost average down into, you know, the wrong thing, the wrong idea. So you really have to always be collecting more information to kind of continually update your theses and have that flexibility.
That makes sense. I'm curious of what it's like being a VC in Stack specifically, because for a lot of us, like, we all believe in the thesis. We're all, you know, stacking, getting our baby yield on our baby bags, which have been depleted lately. And it constantly feels like we're on the precipice. Like, we believe in what Stacks is building. It's built in the right way. And so at some time in the future, we're going to become like known and hit some kind of critical threshold, but it's always waiting. We're kind of like off in the corner. Bitcoiners don't accept us, that kind of thing. People keep building though. And so I'm curious what's that's like where you know, been here since cohort one of Accelerator, invested some of those teams. Cohort two is coming out right now. How do you view, you know, has that shifted at all in the past year and a half since Mainnet launched, and how do you view Stacks in that way?
It's a great question. You know, our thesis is not changed, but we also invest in other chains as well. Stacks is the primary chain that we have invested in so far. And so, you know, I think there's a few things at play. I think a lot of people, you know, and I think it's more of like a Bitcoin, Ethereum, EVM kind of world over here. And Bitcoin over here, I think a lot of people feel that they've missed the boat on Bitcoin and want to kind of stay over in Ethereum, that they've missed a lot of the potential upside of participating in that. I think, you know, when you look at data, a lot of people don't care about privacy and security as much as a lot of us will think. And so they're, you know, when they look at Ethereum or other chains, it's less of a kind of a concern than for a lot of us in the Bitcoin kind of mindset. I think we completely believe that Stacks will have its heyday as you outline. But I think, you know, Mainnet is, you know, a little over a year old, and the ecosystem is still relatively small. We've taken a big hit right now with the bear markets, and same with the public equities market, and which, you know, impacts crypto as well. And so I think ultimately this bear market's going to be good for Stacks, because this is when the projects with substance, technology, strong community, all of those kind of components will rise to the top. And, you know, I think when you look at, you know, Stacks isn't flashy, it's substantive. And I think, you know, that feels to me what the community really kind of is about. It's about a lot of substance. And so I think a lot of people, you know, if you look at think about any technology adoption curve, it takes, you know, we're still in the very beginning of Web3 in crypto. You look at the GDP of Web2 versus the GDP of Web3, pales in comparison. And so, you know, there's a lot of fragmentation. It's not easy to go chain to chain. There's a lot of entrenched interests in Ethereum and other chains. You know, I think one of the things to really look at is, it's just like, you know, as we started to see like AWS, you know, in cloud, you know, launched a public cloud first, then Google Cloud Platform and Microsoft Azure and all that. The thing is Google has the best cloud, the best technology by far, but AWS had first mover advantage. All the developers, IT decision makers, all learned AWS, and so they're just not willing to really change until those incentives kind of became right for them. So, you know, there's those types of dynamics that will be at play. But, you know, we're still incredibly bullish on Stacks, and you know, I think it's a really unique community.
Well said. I want to tease out two things in there. I'm curious because I think a lot of us are looking for like what's the lead domino that might lead to mass adoption, and I think you touched on a couple of them, which is like decentralization and privacy hasn't had its heyday. People just don't really value it, and it might come in the future with regulation or some other thing. But then you also have that because Ethereum was the first mover in smart contracts, EVM compatibility is the standard for people developing on blockchains. And so I've heard some rumblings of EVM hyperchains, but you still have to teach them Clarity, I'm assuming, or would it be compatible? Out of those two, do you think is one of those bigger than another, or what do you think is the lead domino?
I think the lead domino might actually be regulation and things like the SEC regulating crypto and enabling different various consumer protections and different aspects like that. It's back to that technology adoption curve. We're still at the tiny, tiny front. Like it goes innovators, early adopters, early majority, you know, laggards, and then, you know, the people at the tail end who, you know, finally show up to the party. And so, you know, right now, it can only be so big. Crypto can only get so big because it's not currently regulated. There's too much risk for a lot of institutions, you know, certain hedge funds that, you know, take, you know, institutional money. So I think once there's regulatory clarity, that might be the domino that does it. I think one of the things that Stacks did though, which is incredible, is that it was actually the first SEC regulated asset, digital asset, which found some. I read the paper the other day. It was like, it's not a security and not a current. It was like found some like gray territory to get, but you know, even still, that's not enough for, you know, a lot of institutions to come in. And you know, there's incredible high barriers to entry, to using wallets, to gaining tokens, to participating in Discords, and you know, all of that stuff. Native Bitcoin transactions will be a big domino. I think that could really unlock a lot of capital into the ecosystem. And I think, you know, more real world use cases where Web3 can actually really shine, you know, as DAOs proliferate and take on kind of new shape, new governance, and new communities. I think DAOs might be really kind of one of the biggest dominoes that people just don't have their head around yet, of how that can really transform things. I recently joined the Lynx DAO, which is a golf DAO, and I've just been blown away by the community and the way that the team's been executing, and you know, being able to connect Web3 tools to IRL experiences and participated, financed, organized, voted upon, connected with the tools of Web3. And I think, you know, if we can continue to build that stuff in Stacks and bring those ideas and attract more developers and more great founders, we'll absolutely be seeing that growth.
Love that. Okay. We're coming up on time. I want to be respectful of your calendar. I like to end on a high note though. And usually I'm talking to a builder and I'm talking about, okay, let's imagine, you know, it's 3, 4, 5 years in the future, which is 70 in crypto time, and you guys have just crushed it. What's that look like? But you, it's what I'm talking to Jonathan, the individual, and, you know, go back to your LinkedIn. Like, you've done 10 different things over the past 15 years. do you think VC is the thing, or what's your next, what's your next decade look like? What's your plan? I'm curious.
Yeah, we're very committed to Gossamer and continuing to build this business. You know, I think, you know, Chris and I are entrepreneurs at heart. So, you know, we want to grow Gossamer, the venture capital function that we do. We want to get better at our DeFi portfolio. We want to get better at supporting founders and finding great founders and great investment opportunities for our LPs. And we want to improve our abilities to be technical partners, validators. We do mine stacks and do other things like this. So we are active and participate. So we want to continue to do that, build those functions out. But you know, we're also builders ourselves. So you know, we have several other startups that we're incubating right now that are Web3 focused. So you know, stay tuned on some of that. You know, we may later this year have some announcements there. So, you know, we're going to be incubating businesses. And then, you know, that's kind of, you know, I think that should keep me busy for the next 5 years and enjoying all the various hobbies and time off that I can spare with family and friends.
Sounds like a great life. Any closing thoughts or things I didn't ask that you want to end on?
No, this has been tremendous. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share a bit more about Gossamer and why we are such big believers in stacks and the community and everybody within the stacks community. Reach out to us. We'd love to chat and. And yeah, thank you so much, Jake, for all you do.
Perfect. Thank you. I mean, I love stacks. It's safe to say that stacks in the past year I've been here has changed the trajectory of my life, which is kind of crazy to say. And you've played no small part in building up this ecosystem. So thank you. And thank you for taking the time, shedding some light on what a VC does. But yeah, thank you, Jonathan.
My pleasure. Thank you, Jake. It was very enjoyable.
Welcome to Built on Bitcoin. I know that things don't always go your way, but I'll be right here waiting. I've been waiting now. I've been trying to figure out a way to make it out. Make it out, 'cause I don't think about everything going wrong.